You'd better be in on that one, Reverend.
Chapter 12. Startled, Angelique blurted, "You're here."
"Yes," said Stoner mildly.
He pulled over one of the leather armchairs from in front of the Archbishop's desk and dragged it to her side, then sat next to Angelique, close enough to touch her if he just leaned forward a little.
"I understand that we're going to visit the White House this afternoon."
"How did you?"
Angelique caught herself and smiled.
"Of course. You know what I know, don't you?"
"Surface thoughts," said Stoner. "I don't want to invade your privacy, but I need to know what's going on."
She felt her pulse speeding up. Licking her lips, she said,
"Yes, we're scheduled to meet with the President of the United States this afternoon."
"He's not highly regarded, is he?"
Surprised, Angelique replied,
"He won election by a very large majority."
"He had the endorsement of the New Morality. His opponent didn't. That's enough to gain a large majority these days."
She nodded thoughtfully, thinking that Keith Stoner could win any election he chose to run in.
He could make himself Emperor of the World if he wanted to, she knew. "And I could stand at his side, as close to him as I am now."
Angelique watched, almost amused, as Stoner effortlessly moved through the White House's security systems. She herself had sent all her identification and background information ahead. When their New Morality tilt rotor touched down on the landing pad on the White House grounds, Angelique allowed the Marine Corps guards to check her retinal pattern with a handheld scanner. When the guard turned to Stoner, standing beside her, he said,
"That won't be necessary, son."
The Marine turned to his sergeant, who wore three rows of ribbons on his chest and a half-dozen hash marks on his sleeve. His face was granite hard, as blank and expressionless as a statue of an ancient Roman centurion. Stoner smiled at him. Pointing to the ribbons, he asked,
"Is that for the Guatemala campaign?"
Breaking into a pleased smile, the sergeant replied,
"No, sir. The Sudan."
Touching the top row of his decorations, he added,
"This one's for Central America."
"And the Purple Heart," said Stoner.
"Yes, sir. That's how I got my bionic leg."
Stoner nodded.
"My military service was with the Air Force a long time ago. I'll never know if I could have made it as a Marine."
"Ah, hell, sir. If I made it, you coulda."
With that, the sergeant waved them through the checkpoint. And so it went. Angelique and Stoner walked under the blast-proof canopy to the next checkpoint, just inside the door to the executive mansion itself, and the final one down in the basement corridor of the West Wing. Stoner sailed past metal detectors, retinal scanners, X-rays, and chemical sniffers with a smile and a few soft words. At last they were escorted by a tall, cadaverously thin woman in a skirted business suit to an intimately small anteroom. The woman gestured to the striped sofa against the wall opposite the door that led into the Oval Office.
"Please wait here. It will be a few moments."
They sat. Almost immediately the door swung open, and a stoop-shouldered, gray-haired man in a tie and jacket stepped into the anteroom. Stoner noticed a tiny pin in his lapel, twined palm boughs. The man smiled warmly and put out his hand.
"I'm Lawrence Yanovan, the President's media secretary."
Stoner rose and took the man's firm grip. "My name is Keith Stoner."
"We were expecting the Archbishop," Yanovan
said, his smile still in place. Angelique stood up beside Stoner. She said in an apologetic tone,
"The Archbishop is slightly incapacitated, I'm afraid."
"Incapacitated? Nothing serious, I pray."
Biting her lip as if worried, Angelique confided,
"He's confined to hospital for a few days. I'm his representative for this meeting."
Yanovan's smile faded.
"And who are you, sir?"
"A friend," said Stoner.
Yanovan frowned with puzzlement, but slowly turned to the door and pulled it open. The three of them entered the Oval Office, where the President of the United States sat behind his desk, smiling genially.
"How did you get here?"
asked Holly Lane, her voice almost a full octave higher than normal.
Tavalera had simply walked down the little hill and into the village, then picked up the first public phone he'd found and called the chief executive of the Habitat.
Holly's eyes popped when he told her he was in Goddard, more than 1 billion kilometers from where he'd been only yesterday. She came barreling out on an electric bicycle down the village's main street and screeched to a stop at the kiosk by the fountain in the little plaza where Tavallera sat waiting for her. They rushed into each other's arms, oblivious to the few pedestrians strolling along the village street and the driver of the electric truck full of freshly picked fruit who whistled at them from the cab of his vehicle as he drove by.
"You're here,"
Holly gasped once they came up for air.
"You're really here."
She was as bright and pretty and sparkling as he remembered her. She was warm and lively and full of questions. Tavallera told her about Stoner and what was happening Earthside, as Holly parked her bike in a public rack, and they walked slowly, arms wrapped around each other, back to the red-roofed building where the Habitat's governmental offices were housed. It was late afternoon in the Habitat, which kept to Greenwich time, like all the human settlements throughout the solar system. As they walked toward the office building, talking incessantly to one another, Holly suddenly stopped in her tracks, made a left turn, and yanked Tavallera along with her.
"My place," she said,
before he could speak another word. Chapter 13. As Stoner took the antique rocker in front of the massive mahogany desk, the president smiled pleasantly at him and Sister Angelique. But Stoner saw a wariness in those eyes, and beneath it uneasiness. "The archbishop couldn't come himself, huh?" the president asked, almost sulkily.
"He's in hospital for a few days, sir," Angelique repeated.
Then she added quickly,
"No one outside his immediate staff knows about it. He would appreciate it if you held that information to yourselves and no one else."
With a glance at his chief of staff, the president murmured, "Of course. We understand." He turned his troubled eyes to Stoner again, but before he could say anything, the chief of staff said mildly, "Perhaps I should introduce myself. My name is Oscar Melillo. I'm the president's chief of staff." Melillo was smiling, but there was no warmth in his expression. He was a short, round-faced man with light brown skin and thick, dark hair. A barely visible scar ran along his right jaw. He must be proud of that scar, Stoner thought. Otherwise, he'd have had it erased with cosmetic surgery. It's his way of showing that he's tough. Angelique spoke up.
"Mr. President, this is Keith Stoner. He..."
"The Starman," said Melillo. "You're the one who sent that message." "Now, wait a minute," the president said, pointing a finger at Stoner like a pistol. "You're the guy who claims he's been to the stars?" Stoner replied gravely, "I am. I have been." The president's light blue eyes narrowed, and Stoner saw a flicker of fear in them. "You're trying to tell me you've traveled to the stars? That's not possible." He turned to Melillo. "Is it?" "Not by any technology we know of." Stoner said, "I'm the one who's been causing the aurorae each night." "You mean the northern lights?" "Yes." "You can prove that?" With the barest of nods, Stoner said, "That's easy. You won't see them tonight. I'll turn them off." "You can do that?" Melillo asked. "Yes." "You've got a starship?" the president asked, awestruck in spite of himself. "Yes." "Like on the vid shows?" Stoner smiled. "Not quite like the shows you've seen. Rather different, in fact." Stabbing a finger in the direction of his media secretary, the president commanded, "Get that science guy in here pronto, and Aquino."
"The Secretary of Defense," Angelique explained, leaning close enough to Stoner to whisper in his ear.
Yanovan, seated on the wide sofa next to the empty fireplace, picked up the telephone from its end table and began speaking hurriedly into it.
"You've got to tell us all about this starship," the president said eagerly. "All about it."
"I'd be happy to," Stoner replied. "As soon as you dismantle the nuclear weapons you're building in New Mexico." The president's jaw dropped open. The Oval Office went absolutely silent. Stoner could hear birds chirping in the rose garden outside the floor-length windows behind the president's desk.
"Who says we're building nukes?" the chief of staff growled.
"The Iranians know it. The Chinese know it," Stoner said. "You've managed to keep it secret from the International Atomic Energy Agency, but they don't really count these days, do they? And..."